Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. Hello and welcome to the 22nd Robcast podcast, the official Robcast. Now, it looks like since I have been doing the Robcast podcast, well, I should say, since my long hiatus, there have crept up other similar Robcast podcasts, not similar to mine, but they just have the same name. Yes, I know that it's not that creative of a name. In fact, it's interesting that that we would think of the same thing. It kind of binds us in a way, doesn't it? Me and these other Robs, whoever they may be. It's something that we thought was completely unique to us, but then we see someone else has come up with the same idea, and then we react how we want to react. What was funny was a friend came over last night. I should also say his name is Rob, because it adds to the story. And we were getting ready to go out to this event. So he gets there, and I'm just finished up getting ready. Now, he walks in, and we are wearing the exact same outfit. I mean, there is no denying it. I have a dark blue denim jacket on. He has a dark blue denim shirt. I have a white shirt underneath. He has a white shirt underneath. We're both wearing black pants and boots. Not only that, we are, and I never wear watches, but we are wearing the same watch. It's like this sort of, the watch band was this mesh stainless steel mesh watch band. And when I saw that part, I was flabbergasted, because we were already comparing everything else, and then I saw his watch. I literally thought that that his hand was my hand. We were standing so close to each other, assessing each other's outfits, that I thought his arm was my arm, and I thought, my watch looks a little bigger. Maybe my wrist shrank. But no, it was actually that his watch is a little bit bigger than mine. And I just bought this watch on Friday. I mean, I never wear watches. I should wear watches. I've got a nice watch collection. But I bought this watch on Friday thinking, hey, this is a nice watch. Now, I had no idea that the other Rob had that watch. So now we have a decision to make. I could change, or I could not change. And, you know, my friend Rob kept saying, well, it's up to you, because I can't change. You know, we're not at my house. And so I think to myself, and I'm not sure how deep it went, but I thought, do I really need to change myself to make the others around me feel comfortable? When I am expressing my true self, should I bend to the whims of others? Even if it's, you know, a very good friend, if it's someone I love, should I change? And I think just because I've been, you know, getting a little more into self-compassion that I thought, no, I'm not going to change. And you know what? This could be the very thing that starts conversations. I mean, what is it? What feeling comes up when you see someone wearing the same outfit as you? Is it embarrassment? Is it humiliation? Actually, it's embarrassment. I'll tell you why. Embarrassment is something that is temporary. It's something that can easily change. Like, oh, it's embarrassing that I had my fly down. It's embarrassing I had something in my teeth. It's embarrassing that I didn't know that person's name. It's something that's temporary. Now, humiliation is actually something that happens to us that we don't feel we deserve. And we could be very vocal about it. We could say, you know what? I did not deserve that. I was humiliated. Did you see the way that she just came up and gave him a hug like they were old friends, but I know they had a relationship right in front of me. I was humiliated. Now, you weren't embarrassed. You weren't shamed by it. You weren't guilted by it. The interesting thing is that all of these things, in their deepest roots, they all mean something completely different. Like guilt, for instance. Guilt is feeling bad about something that you have done, right? Oh, I feel guilty that. So on the other side of it, oh, someone could say, well, I feel guilty that I didn't remember that person's name. Feeling shame is feeling bad about who you are. And it's interesting because, you know, religions talk a lot about guilt. There's always the classic, the Jewish mother, right? The Jewish mother, she makes you feel guilty. Oh, you never visit me. Oh, I'm so alone over here. Oh, my children never call me anymore. You know, pardon my awfully generic Jewish guilt. And I don't feel guilty for doing that impersonation or impression. I think an impersonation would be impersonating a specific person, and an impression would be an impression, like an impressionist painting, you know, like which by the way, I saw some amazing impressionist paintings on Friday at the Hammer Museum, which is a completely free museum, and there's a whole room of impressionist paintings. There's Van Gogh's, there's Manet's, there's John Singer Sargent's, there's Picasso's, there's Pizarro's, there's Gauguin's, there's Degas. It's very interesting. I mean, if we live in a cultural metropolitan city, then this fabric of our history, this artistic documentation and expression, is just right there for the taking. But to get back to it, I don't feel guilty for doing that impression, because I'm technically Jewish. So I have an identity with it. I feel included with it. Now, if I were to, it's like the old joke. Didn't Banyan in Seinfeld, didn't he convert to Judaism for the stand-up jokes so that he could actually tell better stand-up jokes. That's how dedicated he was. No, but I think, you know, guilt is something that's activating. You can actually, it's actually, guilt can be healthy, whereas shame, you say, oh, I'm ashamed. Shame is isolating. Even though everyone feels it, let's just be honest, everyone feels shame. I feel shame, I admit it. But it can be so isolating. And in extreme cases, I would say, like in narcissists, I would say that narcissists are incapable of feeling guilt, but they're very capable of feeling shame. So if you want to sort of psychologically profile, say, our president, you could say, yeah, he's a narcissist. He feels no guilt over the things that he does or says, right? He doesn't feel bad about it at all, which, by the way, is a common trait among serial killers, I might add. They feel no guilt. They feel no remorse, which is another feeling that's slightly different. Now, I think remorse is the change of feeling from feeling good about something to feeling bad about something. I'm guessing. I didn't look it up, but I'm guessing that. But shame goes deep. Shame is something that we feel we cannot change because it is part of us. I feel ashamed. It's not I feel bad, it's I am bad, right? So if you got this voice inside of you saying, I am bad, I'm not enough, you know, then what is that motor that drives you, right? What is the engine underneath that? What becomes your actions? If we look at our president, our current president, I think that I can see that there's a deep, deep sense of shame about who he feels he is. And I know that it's also a common trait to attack others who you feel don't have as much shame as you have. Someone who's more comfortable being themselves, or someone who, I mean, I think it's all in our heads, but someone who you feel doesn't have as much shame or any shame. So you go on the attack because you may long for what they have. Now, you don't desire it, because desire means, I believe, something that's attainable, right? Ooh, I desire eating some chocolate right now. Well, I've got chocolate in my cabinet, and I can go in there and eat the chocolate if I want to. Now, longing is different. I think longing is almost like you're giving up before you even start. You go, I long for, a life without debt. I long for being financially, you know, it's like you can long for it, but it's not activating. It's not calling you to action. When you say I desire something, that's something to me. I feel that I can act upon it. I desire this. I'm going to, take action upon it. I'm going to go to the cabinet and get some chocolate. Now, maybe our current president longs for someone else's life, someone's life that he feels is free of shame. Now, the interesting thing about shame is that it often works from the unconscious level, right? Guilt is kind of out there. It's on the surface. Oh, I feel guilty. Oh, I should really talk to this person. I really feel guilty. You know, guilt can call us to action as well. It's like, ah, man, I haven't called my mother in such a long time. I feel guilty about it. Well, guess what? You can pick up a phone and you can call your mother. Whereas I feel shame and I cannot call my mother. It's completely different. Completely different. Shame leads to depression. Shame leads to suicidal tendencies. Shame leads to drug abuse. Shame leads to sex abuse, as we saw in unhealthy sexual behavior, as we saw in the movie Shame with Michael Fassbender. I say we saw, but I actually haven't seen it. I just know what it's about. I'll get to it at some point. I feel no guilt not seeing that movie. But perhaps it's my shame that's keeping me from it. Now, here's a question. Can shame be turned into guilt? Or can we identify? Now, I think that's the first step, right? People who seem to be healthy. Now, there is something like in terms of shame, you can have healthy shame. And the only reason that it's healthy is that you can identify it and realize that that is what it is. I feel shame. Well, I'm feeling shame right now. You know, if I look myself in the mirror and I say, I don't like myself, I'm feeling ashamed to be myself. But if I look at myself in the mirror and I say, I don't like that I haven't gone to the gym in a long time, or I don't like that I haven't been eating properly, well, those are things that I feel bad about, not me feeling bad, right? So if somehow we can activate, or if we can identify these different emotions and then assign actions to them, I think that we can healthily live in this world. So let's talk about, I think what's really interesting, what John Oliver has been doing in his television program, and I know that it is a comedy show on HBO. I know that, but let's be honest. There are so many Americans that get their news from comedy shows because it's a palatable way of getting the news. I mean, it's the same reason that Fox News puts on these Barbie doll looking. And I'm sorry if I'm generalizing, or if I'm, somehow objectifying these news anchors, but there are so many, you know, attractive women news anchors on Fox and on other stations as well. Or if you put on Telemundo and you watch the weather, you know, the news, the weather woman will always be this voluptuous, sort of sex bomb. Well, that's to make information palatable, right? So we design it in such a way, we put it in a colorful pill so that people can swallow it. It's the same thing as advertising, right? I mean, people don't need these things. People don't need anything. Well, I shouldn't say anything, but they don't need most of the things that that brands are advertising. They're appealing to their emotions, essentially, their psychological needs, right? Which is in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the need to be seen or the need to be included or the need to be loved. I mean, we feel that if we buy an Audi, you know, then we'll be seen. People will finally see me. If I buy this car, people will see me. People will love me. If I buy this, you know, whatever it is, this fragrance, then women will fall in love with me if I wear this fragrance, whatever it is. So, getting back to it, what John Oliver is doing is pretty brilliant because he has his target audience, which is Donald Trump, and he buys advertising space in Washington, D.C., on Monday mornings during Fox and Friends, or Morning Joe, or whatever that show is, right? And then he puts these advertisements out, which look like they're real advertisements, but it's actually talking directly to him, because we know that he's very influenced by the news. And I think that he's so influenced by the news because when he sees people saying, this needs to be this, it immediately translates to him. You know, let's say that in the news they said, you know, that, well, let's go back to the killings of, you know, or no, let's go back to the Swedish guy talking about the terrorism happening or whatever, you know, which turned out to be false. But he'll say, you know, he'll translate that to say, I'm not good enough. I'm the president of the United States, but I'm not good enough. And it's not I'm not good enough because I haven't done XYZ. It's I'm not good enough, and I see that other people around me are good enough, and I need to put them down so that they won't be good enough, right? That's why he's always bad-mouthing Obama, or even with celebrities. I mean, it's interesting. Our relationship with celebrities, people that we've never seen before, we can have such an opinion on them. For instance, the event that that Rob and I went to last night, it was a rap party for a television show that he had been on. Well, hardly any of the cast members of that show showed up to the party, which was in complete poor taste, in my opinion. You know, they show the bloopers reel with all of these cast members doing funny things, but why is that funny? You know, it really drives it home that that they're not there even more when the entire 7-minute gag reel is about them and they're not even there to be laughed at or to laugh at it, right? And yeah, sure, the show's been going on a long time, but I think it's in very poor taste to not come and support the rap party, because it's the same reason why the cast, you know, when they're in their curtain call, they point up to the technical booth, or they gesture to the crowd, you know, they bow. You're bowing because you're appreciating people appreciating you, right? But I digress. So you look at celebrity culture, and we either love celebrities or we hate them. And publicists know that, and they spin them that way, right? You can only have one Hollywood bad boy at a time. Well, there can only be one Hollywood bad boy, or there can only be one Hollywood wholesome girl next door, right? There are all these sort of these labels and these titles that celebrities have. And even our current president, he gets so infuriated with celebrities when celebrities badmouth him because they badmouth him for things that he does and for things that he says, but he can't see that. All he sees when people badmouth him is it goes directly into his unconscious of shame. He goes, I am not good enough. I am bad. And of course, a narcissist, who feels no guilt, their reaction to that, they'll do anything to not feel that shame. So they lash out. They attack. They go on the attack. They say, oh, Marilyn Monroe, what an overrated actress. So overrated. Okay, Donald Trump. Did I say Marilyn Monroe? I meant Meryl Streep. Ooh, interesting. Was that a Freudian slip? I don't think so. They're both blonde. Of course, Marilyn Monroe is an extreme example of publicists shaping her, right? I mean, geez, they were giving her pills. They were changing her. I mean, she was just regular Norma Jean from the Midwest, and then, you know, she really transformed into this sort of Hollywood starlet. But she's just a normal girl. In her own words. I don't think those are her own words, but I panicked because my mother told me that I shouldn't call women girls because it's degrading, and I felt that tiny pang of guilt, and I heard my mother's voice saying, don't call women girls. So I lied, and I said, oh, that was a quote by Marilyn Monroe, but it wasn't, and I knew it wasn't. So then I had to correct the lie. It could have been an embarrassing situation, but I created an embarrassing situation. And perhaps it's because I feel shame of who I am, that I don't that I'm not enough. I mean, it could go as deep as that, you know. And that's just a small action. So we go back to what John Oliver's doing with these commercials, and it's brilliant, right? Talks about the nuclear triad, and this latest one, if you're watching this morning, is going to be about healthcare, right? It's the same older cowboy. He's talking about catheters and this and that, and then he keeps repeating, "You do get it, right? I mean, you get it, right? You get it, right?" Keeps doing that. Well, I would say that it's the right idea, but what that's doing is it's entertaining a lot of people, but it's not actually doing, and I think John Oliver is on to something very interesting here. He could influence the opinion of Donald Trump, but you have to get a little more creative about it. You have to get psychological with it. You can't be on the surface of it. You can't do it for the laugh. You can't say, well, he's going to watch this information and be tricked into it. No, he's smart enough to know that these are fake commercials geared towards him. He's got people around him who are hip to that, right? I mean, if he's watching Saturday Night Live every night, then you know that at least some aide is telling him what John Oliver said on Sunday night, right? That's probably part of his briefing on Monday morning, which, you know, since he doesn't need the FBI, CIA, NSA, or in military intelligence briefing, you know, he's briefed on television programs which include him and talk about him. So what if you really appealed to his sense of shame? what if you said, look, Donald Trump. Now, I don't know how you do it, right? Because I'm not psychologically manipulative. Well, I don't know if I'm not, but I don't know if I could do it on a whim. Like, you know, it just sort of off the cuff. In a whim, off the cuff. I wonder what those mean and how they originated. If you want to do some research, you can write in. It's P.O. Box 94 in Pequequa, New York, 90910. All of that was incorrect. It was supposed to be a dumb joke. And maybe it was a dumb joke, but I think the dumb joke was actually dumber than I anticipated. Which could have either backfired or made it better. It's, comedy is, you know, well, what's the old adage? Dying is easy, comedy is hard. So maybe if you took, you know, some sort of psychological approach to Donald Trump, you say, look, we know you don't feel guilty for your actions, but we do know that you feel shame about who you are. And the first step to alleviating the shame is to identify it. Let's identify your shame, Donald Trump. Why do you feel shame? Do you feel you're not good enough? In fact, we don't even need to go into the whys, right? That's history. There is a theory, and I think I've said it before, that there is no past, there is no future. So if we can't change the past, then that means it's perfect, right? So all we can do is live in the now and change. But we look at someone like Donald Trump and we go, you know, if he were to really have a heart-to-heart with the deepest part of his soul, he'd say, what do you want to achieve here? And I don't mean with the country or with the world or with people's opinion about you. I'd say, what do you want to achieve here? How do you want to feel at the end of your tenure as president? How do you want to feel tomorrow when you wake up? How do you want to feel right now? And I think if we can identify that shame, then perhaps that shame won't have as much of an impact on him, right, as with anyone else. Now, it's a tricky thing, because I know that, for instance, serial killers, who we've mentioned, when they're interviewed in prison after they've done their crimes, they could feel no remorse. They're like, either no remorse or no recollection of doing it or denying doing it even after they confessed of killing, you know, doing these heinous crimes, killing 40 people, 70 people, who knows. They go, yeah, I did it. I don't feel remorse. But what they do feel is a deep, deep, deep shame. Such a deep shame that they won't even go near it. They won't touch it. Because if they do, they start to tap into who they really are. And I don't think they want to do that. I think they want to create an identity and create a public persona and fool people because they want to run away from all the shame. That's the interesting thing about shame, right? It's isolating. Everyone has it, but it keeps us separate from each other. Well, what do we do about that? What's the point of shame? Why do we have it? I know that, you know, it's depicted in almost all religions. Catholic shame, Jewish shame, Mormon shame, Lutheran shame, Muslim shame. I know there's a lot of shame to go around. But what do we do? What do we do with that? We can identify it. And then what's the next step? Change. Right? can I say to myself, I am enough? Even if my shame is telling me, you're not enough. My shame's saying, you're bad. I say, I am good. What do you know? What do you know, shame? You're just trying to hold me down. You're trying to hold me back. You're trying to keep me separate. Well, guess what? We're all connected. Maybe we're all one organism living and breathing. Maybe I am the other Rob. And we're just two sides of the same thing, and that's why we dressed alike. Maybe we all live and breathe and feel the same emotions and think that we're all so unique, but we're not. And maybe if we just realized that, then we could be nicer, kinder, not nicer, but kinder, more compassionate towards others' suffering, and we could be proactive in living together harmoniously and peacefully on this earth. Just maybe. Now, is that something I desire or something I long? I'll have to think about it. We'll be back next week.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.